other thing you see in this is appears to be an image of a previous conflict between Albert and Serena that involves some sort of explosion. And then you push your way in to tell them that it's rude to invade, rude to not include everyone in the psychic conversation.
Yeah, I think it's rude to invade another person's conversation is beyond gug.
It's at that point that she makes psychic eye contact with you, and the conversation just implodes. It's gone now. That brain space is over.
Oh, you know, I just tormented the person that was... yeah, okay, that wasn't smart, but probably in character.
Yes, probably in character. While this is happening, is anybody else exploring the area or doing stuff, or should I skip to the next bit of exposition that I've been saving for 3 weeks?
So I have one simple thing, is that we have these giant mole monsters, probably with really big teeth, my assumption. Yeah.
Well, what they have is like lamprey windsock faces with like teeth inside of that. Our teeth are significantly sized, right? They're more like shark teeth than like fangs, because they use them.
Yep. To, so like, Zach, the question is,
yes,
will it hinge?
Can you build a tooth hinge?
Yes.
Fucking absolutely, yes. Yes.
Alright, so like, yeah, he's just ripping out teeth and taking them up to the top surface and like, you know, making a nice little hinge up there. So that's definitely what takes.
Alright, so so you take your first like armload question mark of these teeth, and I'm imagining you're using your weird earth walk ability, right? Like you're
absolutely
okay. Where you pass through this ground to get to the surface, and you get to the surface. Give me what's it called? Alertness, awareness, notice. What's it called in this?
Notice, I think. Notice.
Notice. Yes, notice.
I'm totally good at notice.
Give me notice.
Oh
wow!
It's nice when the dice cooperate.
Alright, real quick, since we did that, you know what, I just have a question for you, the player. Is Tink making any attempt to conceal what is happening?
Absolutely not. That seems like the opposite of a hinge.
Okay, that's true, that's true. That would defeat the point of the hinge, yes.
Yep.
Okay. Cool. Noted. Alright. Does anybody else have anything going on, or are we...
Not particularly. We're just kind of waiting for them to, you know, get their act together. If they go on for long enough, like longer than 5 minutes on this, I think Perdicion will interrupt, but before then, let them hash it out.
Okay. Goro, the sword, the new sword, the real shiny one that felt really good to swing.
Yeah.
It's sort of, the sense you're getting is that it's really happy with itself at this exact moment. It's like, you took out one of the big guys, right? Like you chased it down its hole and like stabbed it to death. Is that right?
I don't remember, but possibly. It sounds like something I could have done, yes.
Yeah. And so it is sort of... Because I've described it as like a flamenco guitar, Latin guitar sort of sound, right? And what it's doing right now is it's sort of doing the equivalent of like that guitar strum warm-up thing, right? That musicians do before they start doing stuff. But it's sort of doing that contentedly. There's the sound of it being like, of it making that sort of tonal noise in your head as it basks in the afterglow of successful violence, essentially. Yeah, Serena turns from Gug past Alfred, and she goes and she walks up to the side of her now upright but completely ruined transport, and she knocks on the door, and the door opens. And inside, there are two people. Gug, you may recognize them from a moment ago. I don't know how racist Gug's brain is about humans, that they all just sort of look alike to him, or to Gug. But these are the two people. Everyone else sees them for the first time. They are the person who opened the door is a middle-aged man, probably mid to late 40s, with dark hair, a beard, wearing some sort of, like, what a person who doesn't travel through the post-apocalyptic wilderness probably thinks is, like, decent traveling clothes, but is really just sort of the equivalent of off the rack, like a pair of jeans and a heavy jacket. And it's all just torn to shit. And the other person is currently laying down on the far side of the van on one of the couches that's in the back area of this van. And it is a late teenage girl with her hair shaved in like one of those like high top, not quite mohawks. And she is wearing what would probably be fairly stylish, like street, like city rat gear. But she is not quite catatonic. She looks very, very scared and out of it at this moment. Serena looks at the father, or looks at the older human and says, "Okay, everything is okay. We, the danger has passed, but we will need to be making, our transport plans have changed. You and your daughter will need to come with us now." And he looks directly at her, and then he looks past her to all of you. And you can see his face go bloodless.
I tell the guy in Spanish, you know, it's okay. The big guy's not as scary as he looks, I promise. Because, like, you know, Goro is, like, clearly the least actually threatening of us, but...
So you say that in Spanish? So he looks at you when you say it, and his eyes go from sort of terrifiedly darting around to locked on you in a very scared fashion. And you say, you tell him, "We're okay, even Goro, Goro's fine," in Spanish?
Well, it's, Goro's the biggest of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, so, like, clearly the biggest, cephalopoidian is the scariest. So I'm just letting him know that Goro's okay, because if Goro's okay, the rest of us are probably fine.
You're letting him know the biggest one here isn't going to eat him?
Yes.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
From my experience, monkeys are very concerned about being eaten.
For good reason.
Okay.
I mean, he ain't wrong.
It's clear that what you are saying is not registering to him. And he looks again to Serena. And Serena sort of reaches out a hand and touches him on the shoulder and gives him a quick, like, nod and glance, like, comforting as she can be, which is not super comforting. But all of you that are nearby also feel sort of surge of psychic energy. And that the combination seems to steal his spine a little bit, because he opens the door all the way and makes one look, takes one last sort of like look around the group, and then reaches in further into the van, picks up the girl, steps out of the van with her in his arms, and stays squarely behind Serena from the rest of you, but is clearly ready to start moving out. And then Serena says, "Well, I guess. Well, it. That's that. We need to be moving." And she looks directly at Alfred and she says, "You did bring transport, yes?" Alfred's like, "Yeah, yeah. My ship's topside. We just gotta get back up there."
I stage whisper to Tink, "Does that piece of crap still run?"
What? Moving teeth.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, you're gonna need to like, because you all fell through the earth, and other than Tink, our options for getting back to the surface are somewhat limited. Luckily, Serena has a plan if no one else does.
Oh. But we're not going to like Serena's plan.
I mean, it's all right.
Goro, can you throw us up there?
I think we explored this option before, didn't we?
No, you're right.
I mean, it's like 30 foot. Goro's pretty strong. I mean, Goro's pretty strong. Perisione weighs like a million pounds, though, so...
Yeah, that's probably less than ideal.
And is not terribly aerodynamic. Like, Gug could make Gug more arrow-shaped, but it's going to be a struggle. Also, hurling a currently mostly unconscious teenage girl 30 feet through the air out of a hole in the ground.
Oh, Tink, can you hinge us a path up?
I mean, like, just implant shit in the walls and build you a ladder up?
Well, it doesn't have to be a ladder, but yeah.
We'll just do this Minecraft style where we dig stairs.
Alright, well, first, how much yellow spray paint do we have? Anyway, sure.
Alright, Tink starts that process, and it is clear that... it goes fairly fast, but Alfred and Serena are both fascinated by Tink doing this thing. The other human who's there, who has so far not said a word, right, looks impressed, but in that way that is still not quite sure he's going to live through this, right? After a few minutes, Tink has essentially built an upward tunnel through the ground. All of you can use it to surface. It is still nighttime. Initial hole was about, I think I said 25 or 30 feet from the ley line, right? Which at night glows a very bright blue and is visibly very tall. Like it's multiple stories tall. And as you exit the tunnel, the tunnel mouth is pointing away from the ley line. All right. So who, other than Tink, who makes it to the surface first? Is there a marching order or are we just all trying to get the hell out of the hole?
I feel like Perdicion is kind of in the lead as kind of the person who's most likely to be able to take the hits.
Okay. Okay. All right. So, Perdicion, you clear the top right behind Tink. You are now covered with like, mud and chunks of earth because you've been in the blast radius of Tink's hammer this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah?
I was going to say, he would feel odd about that. But the odd feeling is that he doesn't feel odd about that.
Okay.
He doesn't
okay.
have that those sensors that, like, he knows it's like, this should be gross. I don't feel gross. I just am covered in this stuff.
So, yeah, you're about to exit the tunnel mouth. Goro, on the way out of the, because the tunnel, you have to, like, bend over to get up this tunnel, right? Because not only is it a tunnel, so it's going to be inherently not as big as it could, as like a passage your size would normally be, but Tink is making it, right? And right. So Tink's understanding of bodies larger than I can never remember the type of fairy you are.
Spriggan.
Spriggan sized is less than ideal. And so you're sort of like half squatting, half bending over to get up this thing. And while you're doing that, you feel very acutely the eyes of both of these wizards on you and on your new acquisition, specifically. And a little voice, there's sort of like a guitar, an ominous guitar strum, and a little voice in your head goes, "They would take me if they could."
Clearly they're fans of flamenco music.
Yes, exactly. And you feel a pang of, an involuntary pang of defensiveness, or not jealousy because you have the thing, but like that feeling of, no, it's mine.
Right.
This is mine, right? And we make it to service, and Perdicion, you clear the tunnel first, and you come up out of this this tunnel covered in mud, and you turn to face the ley line, and the blue light from the ley line is glowing on your like mud covered form, and you look like a slightly more grotesque version of Schwarzenegger in that scene in Predator, right? You can see the dark shape of Alfred's transport in the ley line, because that's where it got parked, right? It was like magically recharging. You can give me a notice roll, please. Tink doesn't get one because Tink already blew his.
Tink's been massively.
There are more important things than noticing stuff, okay? Like henching.
Five?
Alright, there's. Something isn't right here. Like, even more so than the rest of the circumstances would dictate, right?
Yeah.
Something is not right here. It's a clear night. It's dark, but there's the light of the moon and the ley line. And you should be able to see fairly well. But your senses, like, something in your, like, monster hunter instincts is telling you something's wrong here, but you didn't roll high enough to know what it is.
No. Es silencio. Es mucho silencio.
It's the bugs. You can't hear any bugs.
That's it. There's like, usually in the desert there would still be sounds, and that's not happening here.
Well, this isn't even the desert. This is, is like Indiana.
I mean, regardless, there ain't no animal noises. There would be animals.
So you're saying less interesting than prairie.
Yeah. So he...
Whatever.
I think we need to be careful. We're not alone out here.
So Albert is behind you. He was using you as a means of blocking the mud. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he steps to your right, but still stays behind you, looking towards his transport. And he starts chanting in the language of magic. A light forms in his hand, and he casts it forward. And this is a really common spell in Rifts. It's Globe of Daylight, right? And it's just like literally a ball of daylight that lands somewhere afield and casts daylight, right? And his lands in front of his transport, and it just looks like his transport in daylight. And with the globe there, immediately around his transport, the ley line loses its visibility. Like, you just can't, you don't see it nearly as well. It's still visible, especially since all, literally all of you have some sort of magical senses, right?
Yeah, it's a hazy, shimmery sheen instead of, like, the bright blue glow.
Yeah. But there's nothing else immediately illuminated by it. However, there is a sense that one of the far edges of the like sphere of light that it casts, right? The ground and like the ruins of this village that you came through around it don't look quite right for some reason. That you're having a really hard time putting your finger on.
Is it like a mimic?
Oh.
I reach out to it with my mind.
I mean, I do know, but I'm not telling you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I try to talk to it with my brain.
You try to talk to it with your brain. I'm into that. Give me some kind of psionics roll, and then spend your power points for telepathy or whatever your nonsense is. Alright, so you successfully engage your telepathy, right? You are trying to, let me just make sure I understand. It is Gug's belief that there is something imitating pieces of scenery, and Gug is attempting to make telepathic contact with it?
Yeah, yeah, this is a trap. There's a monster that looks like what we were here before, and it wants to eat us. This happens all the time on my home planet.
Okay. Yeah, so what Gug gets for this effort is that nothing talks back.
All right, it's definitely a trap. Nothing talks back.
And now everyone else is sort of exiting behind you and making the same turn. And as soon as Serena specifically sees the globe of daylight out, she's got her staff up and is, again, chanting the same strange elven vocab and collecting lightning around the staff. She assumes that if Albert is throwing around magic, something is up.
I think Perdiccian will cautiously, like, move towards the craft and see if that springs anything.
Okay. Is anyone going with Perdiccian, or are we letting Perdiccian, like...
Oh, I'm absolutely not letting Perdiccian go alone.
I think the henge needs finishing touches.
Tink's just like, hey, I'll be there in a minute. You guys got this.
Yeah, let me know if somebody needs smashing.
Alright, what about Goro?
I think Goro was the last person out of the tunnel, so he might be a little bit behind.
Okay. Goro, you see... you see Serena turn around to the I'll draw three chests. Father carrying his daughter, and hold out a hand towards them. He stops walking, and then there is a shimmering bubble appears around them. It's a fairly common protective spell that you would probably be familiar with. That is being applied to these poor people that you are about to bring hell down upon. Yeah. And then, so Perdiccian and Gug are moving forward into the globe of lights area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you make it, pretty easily to the transport and nothing happens. But you are not that far from the visual disturbance, and you can see, now that you're up close, like, yeah, something's weird there. It's, like, shimmery and lower resolution than the surrounding area.
Just on, like, out of sheer paranoia and a hunch, Perdiccian is going to draw his ion pistol and snap a shot off into it.
Okay. You fire... you pull your weapon and you fire a shot into it. Gug, what are you doing while Perdiccian does this?
I mean, I'm getting ready to pull him out of the mouth of the thing when it eats him.
right. And as Perdicion does this, Albert and Serena tense up. Like, they are, okay, well, clearly it's go time. The weird monster hunter guy spotted something, right? Your ion blast. Give me an attack roll at -2, and then give me a damage roll as well. I'm curious to see how this goes.
So it's a 2. So
okay.
Not really going to hit, probably. But if it does hit for some reason, it's going to do 11 damage.
Alright, yeah, so your ion blast goes, it doesn't hit anything, but Gug, you definitely see this, and everybody else who's watching closely probably sees this as well. The ion blasts, especially as it exits the globe of light, globe of daylight, it appears to, like, bend in its trajectory. Like, it's clear that it doesn't hit anything. But it's almost like it passed between you and something that was gravitationally lensing or something wild like that. And the spot that it, like, appears to bend around is only about 15 or 20 foot from Gug and, Perdicion and the transport. Gug and Perdicion, since you're the closest, give me notice rolls, please.
3's across.
It is not Perdicion's night.
We're gonna go ahead and spend a penny and reroll. We've got those. There we go, a nice solid 4.
Both of you, because this is, current appearances, notwithstanding, not the most subtle of things that's about to happen. You know that sound, when, like, a capacitor charges, right?
Mm-hmm.
You hear and feel that sound, but with magic. And when I'm talking a capacitor, I'm not talking, like, the ones that you can, like, mess with inside a disposable camera. I'm talking, like, a capacitor that's several feet across and has a sizable gap to it, like one that sets your hair on end if you're standing too close to it.
Dodge.
Yeah, because Perdicion, you are somewhat familiar with like military stuff, right?
Yes.
Does the Colombian military, and I'm asking you as a player to give me some world detail, because I don't know this off the top of my head. I'm not expecting you to come up with the canon answer.
Sure.
I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah.
How much, like, magical weaponry does the Colombian military use? Like, would you be familiar with...
I mean, considering the anti-monster program is created in conjunction with wizards working with the Colombian military, I feel like there's a healthy blend of magic and technology there.
Okay. So, yeah, this might be a thing that you're familiar with the Colombian equivalent of, in terms of, oh, yeah... Sometimes they have these, like, magical artillery weapons that function on a similar principle, at least to my, you know, jock-ass monster hunter knowledge.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, he can easily identify, oh, that sounds like a fireball cannon charging up.
Uh-huh, yeah. And it sounds exactly like a fireball cannon charging up, yes.
Oh, fuck, that's a fireball cannon charging up. He will grab Gug and immediately dodge off to the side.
Okay. What is everybody else doing as that happens?
Admiring the artistic balance of the henge.
Awesome. We have not gotten Goro back yet. That's okay.
I'm here.
We can work with this. Oh, okay, cool.
I think Goro's going to stand in front of the civilians.
Okay, that is excellent. Yes.
Yeah, do I have enough time to be, like, run psychically?
Yes, of course. Speaking even with your brain is a free action.
Sorry, I didn't copy. Say again.
Speaking even with your brain is a free action.
All right.
You can always yell something dramatically appropriate. So yeah. Perdizion, like, grabs Gug and dives out of the way. And they land, I'm imagining, yeah, because I'm imagining it's, like, bodyguard style, right, with the dive.
Yeah, it's absolutely get down, Snake President.
Okay. So, that happens. Gug and Perdizion, like, hit the ground and bounce and slide, and then there's a beat where nothing happened.
Oh, now it's going to explode. I've seen a lot of movies.
And then everyone can see this, although it's going to be a little bit hard to see some of it, because most of it's going to fall outside the globe of light, daylight. But the cloaking field on this thing drops. And it is, you are now all looking up at, some of you are about 40 feet away from it, some of you are really close to it, and it's basically standing over the transport, over Albert's ship, right? And it is a 35 to 40 foot tall silver metal robot gorilla
That D&D podcast is released under a Creative Commons 4.0 attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives license. Feel free to share with friends, but don't cut anything out and don't sell our work. Please visit us at thatdndpodcast.com or on Twitch or YouTube at thatdndpodcast. Intro music is Now We Ride, metal version by Alexander Nakarada. Outro music is Shadow Rain, also by Alexander Nakarada. Nakarada's music can be found on freestockmusic.com, on Bandcamp, and on creatorchords.com. Nakarada can also be found on YouTube and Patreon at anakarada. Rifts is a role-playing system published by Palladium Books. Savage Worlds and this game's Savage Rifts combination is owned and published by Pinnacle Entertainment. All other copyrighted content is owned by its associated copyright holder.